Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host, Lorraine McGinley. Today we're joined by Helen Lorraine from Coacha. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. Can you just tell me a background about yourself and where you are at the moment?
I'm originally from South London. I've been coaching outside of the UK, outside of England, for like the last 8 years. Right now, I'm in New York, about 3 hours from Manhattan. I work for the Rush brand, so I am the director, one of the directors at a club called Albany Rush.
And your background is coaching. You've been doing this for a long time, you know, working in the kind of men's game and women's game. But see, when you went from, you know, South London to, you know, the States, what's your experience has been like, you know, in the last wee while of like maybe the coaching you've seen or the players you've worked with, and what have you learned from that?
So much. It's been such an education. Like, one of the main reasons that I left home was because I wanted to get miles more experience than I was being exposed to. And it had to be, you know, people say, I'm an experienced whatever. I think you've also got to look and say, well, that experience, is it good experience? Is it varied experience? Is it relevant experience? So I felt I needed to go so that I could get a more relevant experience. I needed to coach more. I needed to be under a bit more pressure in terms of trying to show with the appropriate age group players that I understood where I was trying to get to as a coach long term. So I had wonderful experience. It was a good decision to leave home. I've missed out, I think, educationally with what we offer with the English FA. But in terms of the practical side and implementation of what I've been learning or what I was taught, it was a good move.
Yeah, because a lot of people move abroad, you know, for maybe a couple of years and they come back, you know, and try and move to the, like, I always remember one of the people I know, you know, they go to Spain for 2 years and they're trying to implement a Spanish style, which doesn't work, but sometimes it does work, but you need to have, as you say, the relative experience. And, you know, working, you know, with different experiences, you know, working the foundation, the youth, the senior, you know, you said, is that something that it's good to have that experience working with such a variety of different, you know, people, ages, so therefore you can learn how to deal with a 60-year-old who maybe wants to go pro or the 5-year-old who just wants to just turn up, you know, and enjoy themselves, which they all should be doing at that age anyway.
I'm not a very open-minded coach, and I think that it's important to have an idea of as many facets to our industry as possible as practitioners. Yet, I don't think you would want to be a master of none so that you are able to do the work with foundation, development, pre-academy, but then you'd only sort of skimming surface, because there's so much detail which relates to how we develop players. So if you're looking at players from the age of 8 to 21, detail is immense, which is why it's divided, isn't it, to the groupings that it's divided into. So I've tried to get the gist of that spectrum. Yeah, I do think it's important to specialise. So my specialist area, I think, is really the development phase.
Yeah, and that's interesting because see when you're like a lot of young coaches at 14, 15, 16, they get many, many years of experience ahead of them, but then they start to choose, you know, like I want to work in the women's game, I want to work in the men's game, the boys' game, the girls' game. But it's also, as you know, there's also the tactical analysis, there's the scouting. Do you kind of, obviously everyone wanted to be the next, you know, Gordon Klopp or the Pep Guardiola, these kind of amazing coaches, which everyone wants to be, but sometimes you just have to be the best version of yourself. And I always remember Pete Sturgis, when I talked to him, and he talked about, you know, can you be the best under 10s coach in the world? Why can't you be that? Because that's still really ambitious. But do you think people really struggle with that when they're younger, that they think they see the money, they see the basically the lights and see the excitement when they see things on TV, when sometimes changing that, you know, helping that under 9, you know, develop themselves, you know, is actually could be a better, you know, progress for some coaches, you know, to basically make them a better person.
Is was essential when I've started to value it more as I've matured, because obviously we might be great with our knowledge of the game, we might be really great with our analysis aspects of how to decipher things, yet at the end of the day, over a period of time is when you make the mistakes and when you have that reflection, and it's difficult to escalate that or to try and accelerate it. So over a period of time is probably when you're most likely to improve your soft skill. And so the pictures you're trying to paint for players, maybe they can be done differently or with more effect as you improve your personal skills. So I think maybe as a younger coach, you're looking at being emulating the most well-known coaches that we are aware of. But as you get older or as you get more mature in the game, you start to realise, actually, I can be really, really effective if I tap into maybe the psychosocial aspect of working with these people, working with players, working with my colleagues.
Yeah, because that's the, when you're working, like, you see a lot of people on Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, they're experienced in this area, really, you know, but when it comes to, like, the development phase, you know, everyone wants to develop the next player or the next big thing, but sometimes the player may struggle with maybe some kind of feedback, or they might be a visual learner, or they might be one of them, they might just be on the pitch, you know, and they need a lot of detail. From your experiences, you know, how do you try and develop the player to maybe come out of their comfort zone, you know, more, so therefore they become a better person and then become a better player when you've kind of been working in this area for a long time?
I absolutely love it. I think I find coaching really difficult, and I know that I've had people say to me before, like other coaches, oh, it's easy, isn't it? And I really don't think it is. I think coaching is so, so difficult. It's so challenging because we've got egos ourselves as coaches, you know, and we've also got our own memories maybe of what we'd like to play, and maybe we've got our own residue, which is based on our own family experiences or our own amazing careers or terrible careers or mixture. So I love the challenge of trying to figure out how I'm connecting that message or that working relationship with players. And what I'm finding is that you're not always going to be right. And sometimes you do lose a bit of face when you've had a think about how something's gone, what went well. But empowering players, or at least making it clear to players what the expectations are, and allowing them to understand that they have got a massive role to play in achieving certain things. Confidence is the most important thing, but you can't just give someone confidence. So having a conversation with players, I think it's really, really important, and it might be different types of conversations, might be peer-to-peer. I have a lot of casual conversations with players, but it's difficult to make sure it looks genuine and authentic, so it's not like, you know, today I must speak to this player, and then you go over robotically, you know. So it's a case of trying to figure out yourself, how do you come across, because I'm very direct and it doesn't work with everyone. So you've got to try and do a lot of reflection. I think I said that already, but reflection is important, because you might think you're coming across a certain way, but for me, as I've been in different cultural environments, not just different countries, but it differs from state to state here, and then it differs from club to club, because like you will know, a lot of these clubs in the US, it's just one person who decided to start a club. It's not even any affiliation with anything. So you could be in an environment where it's not the dumb thing that you have these conversations with players, or having a player led might be part of the philosophy, but not part of what realised. So when you come over and you're acting out things that you are familiar with, you're going to have to maybe take a little bit of a step back or grow more resilient, because the environment may not be ready for how you connect with players. It doesn't mean you should give up. I often sort of stick with things, but I think it's being patient with the different ways to have conversations with different types of players to meet the same end, really.
Yeah. Because that's obviously one of the roles that you have, you know, being director of coaching. You need to set the standards, set the culture, set everything, you know. But see when things go wrong, because in football, everyone's very happy when the results are all, you know, really, you know, when we're winning. Again, results might not actually be the 1-0. It might be the child who's, you know, developed from the 11s to the 13s, you know, or that child who's maybe first time they've kicked a ball, you know, because it's a win, you know, like small little wins. But from a kind of coach education point of view, you know, you've obviously need to set things at, you know, Albany Rush. What is the kind of standards? What is the things when things go wrong, or when things go right? How do you, you know, reward it? And when things go wrong, how do you try and fix things to make the standards very high again?
That's still in a development phase, because I've not been here that long. So I arrived here at the end of January, and I've come here from a professional club. And even though we're a massive brand, we're a relatively new club in the area. We've only been in this area for 3 years. So the culture where we are right now is that players tend to move on at the end of the season. They often just change clubs. So that means the challenge is that you enter into the club, whether you've been there for a while or not as a coach. Often the players and the families have brought in a whole new set of cultures from the clubs they've been at, and over a 5-year period or a 4-year period, they're changing clubs every year. So I've had these conversations where it's so important to make sure that, because of the transient sort of nature, you've got to be really, really firm with reiterating what the culture is within this environment. There's a book called The Barcelona Way.
Yeah.
And I know we're not going to be Barcelona. Do you know what I mean? We're not all Barcelona. The concept is, you get new people in, of course, that's just the way it is. But your culture is what glues everyone together, and you've got to make sure that everyone's on board with that. So in terms of my role, I've just got to make sure that it's clear that I'm listening here, but this is the way we operate, and these are the reasons why. Players have struggled with it. Families have struggled more. However, because of the fact that it's a longer game, towards the end of our process is when you kind of, people tend to make a realisation. That's why you've brought in an experienced coach. I'm not the best coach, but I do make use of my experiences for the betterment of my environment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I had a discussion with someone today about this, about experience versus, you know, how much a lot of people get external people in now, because they really struggle with when it's internal. It actually makes the job harder, because therefore you're going to let someone down, you know. But having experience working internal and external, I prefer to work as in the external. So therefore I'm not affiliated with the club, or maybe like it could be the common ones, usually youth teams, and it's actually a parent who takes the team, who's the son or daughter, and then therefore they maybe take maybe favouritism, or there's a, you know, the potential it could be like, oh, you picked my son 5 times, you know, but he's not came to training and all this, but you, but again, this is why I always say you need to set the standards first and say things that are going to be basically black and white, you know, in a way, makes things actually thinking about, I'm actually the coach, it's not about being the best coach in the world, it's about how you are as a person, how you drive the standards, how you drive the coaching around you, the players, but also the biggest thing I've seen now is a lot of, in the kind of women's game in particular, is the external people are coming in because it's not as professionalised as some clubs, but it makes it sometimes better. But again, the vice versa is if you've got a bigger club, then you can have the internal people who have got the resources. From this, you know, you've obviously been a coach, educator, and developing, you know, coaches. How do you try and develop the coaches around you to make them better, but also understand that when things go wrong, that they're not there to blame, they're there to get help, which can sometimes, again, ego is the enemy, as we all know from one of the fantastic book. But how do you try and develop that kind of style? Therefore, the player, the coach is not under pressure, then for the players are not that under pressure because they know that you've set the standards already.
Concepts are a good thing. So firstly, you've got to just try and see what the coaching style is. It's not a, you know, a lot of us are used to like an academy style environment and not necessarily, but basically an academy style environment where we are delivering this, this is what we expect to see, and then you must complete whatever app we use to show that you have done this. But when you move into a saturated area like the US is, you're competing with so many different opinions of what they should be doing, and you've got to be operating at a really decent level for people to just toe the line, you know, because everyone's their structure on the bigger scale isn't as dominant as the structure that I've come from, because that's obviously back home, this is our main sport. Over here, they're doing all sorts of different sports, so they don't necessarily automatically buy into having a director of coaching come along and say, you must do this. So for me, I have to firstly see what type of coach this is that I'm speaking with or observing, and then you've got to make sure that you see the positives, as you would with most people, you know, so they receive some plans about things that they are doing, because they might feel, oh, we've got this person coming in and all she's going to do is say, I'm doing this wrong, I'm doing that wrong. So it's good to kind of dispel that sort of that myth that you're just there to tell someone that you can do it better. So see what they're doing and praise what they're doing when you can see what they're trying to work towards. And then give the concepts, you know, so, right, we're working on this for this group of players, so I'm not going to tell you to deliver this practice, however, what we're trying to achieve is this, so even though you're going to deliver it in whatever guise you want to deliver it in, this is the concept of the practice, and that's the challenge, is not taking away too much from the coach, because I think it can be a little bit demeaning, and it's a bit counterproductive, so you kind of need to deal with the person first. I think it may vary as you pop up the levels. I work travel soccer, so it's of you've got a lot of clubs in a small area. Everyone's competing. Everyone knows that they can go to a different club very, very quickly, and so the coaches have to believe that you see them and you're not just treating them as they're disposable, you know?
Yeah, and that's, we talk about kind of different sports, because I know speaking to someone about the relevance of, you know, constraints to development, you know, and obviously different game models, but there was one of my people I spoke to, he talked about the Pep Guardiola, you know, and he went to the kind of All Blacks, you know, for the New Zealand rugby team, and how they kind of high pressed. So how do they, once when things went wrong, it's going over the top, kicking the ball, you know, so again, relating it back to, you know, Ederson, and then you've got the like karate or jiu-jitsu, you know, like you've got a 6'5" person, you know, grappling a person that's 5'4", but then that's being a defender versus an attacker sometimes, and it's different ways of thinking. Do you try and use multi-sports or different sports to maybe enhance the coordination, the balance, maybe different ways of thinking, you know, so therefore the kids actually learn there is different ways of developing, you know, different skill sets, but using football or soccer as the kind of main theme, but using other sports around you to improve the basically the development of the child, and also probably the coaches around you.
I'm so one dimensional. I only know football or soccer. That's all I know. And the players we have, but we're not one of the clubs that say to players you must only play this sport. There are lots of clubs that do that, which is fine for them, you know. But we know that 12 up is when you get selected for academies, and so before that time you kind of are free to, you know, I don't know, do gymnastic or whatever, you know, but something that the All Blacks have is they have their 15 principles, don't they?
Yeah.
So their culture is based around this is how we act regardless of your size, your competency, your ego. These are our 15 principles. So when you're working with over here, you know, when you've got such a temptation for people to go elsewhere, even change schools. I've, you know, we've had players that have left this school to concentrate on basketball, you know, and that wouldn't really be the norm back home. But I think it's important for them to get a sense of self to how they fit into our principles or methodology or philosophy or whatever you want to call it. So I very rarely refer to other sports, but that's just a personal thing. Just because I'm only soccer, and I think that if players are taught to work their eyes away from the ball, then it gives a different purpose to their movement or lack of movement. It gives a different purpose to them building pictures and retaining data that their eyes are picking up on. I'm not a multi-sport sort of person at all. I'm only soccer, and I do expect players and families as well, because families invest so much over here in their game. If they're expecting a certain product or a certain outcome, I do put pressure on those individuals to make sure that their eyes are committed to what their outcome is expected to be. If that makes sense.
No, totally. And that's kind of one of the kind of final questions on this. You know, you look at eyes, you look at a lot of analysis work, you know, and I know you've got a background in, you know, tactical analysis and working. Do you think having that experience working, you know, kind of touched on at the start, but having that tactical, you know, brain actually helps the players a little bit more, so you can explain things, you know, through video, through, you know, then for you can go on the pitch and explain it a little bit more. Is that something that you've tried to implement in your club? So therefore, there's two or three ways of learning. So therefore, we don't. So as you say, like maybe it's one direction. It's only one dimensional, you know, thinking. But sometimes it can be split, but in a way, it's still the same way.
Mentally, because I'm still learning a lot of that as well, which is so important for me to try to keep learning, because of the importance of making sure that you can, you know, you've got people again to take pictures all the time of what's happening on the field, and you can take any of those photographs and just sit down with a player and say, right, well, you can see you're not on the ball, however, what's occurring around you, and it's easy to get them to do it if you know that's part of the plan. So we've got a couple of coaches here who I do something similar with, but it's just a case of, hold on, this game, do you understand how this game she does differ to basketball? It does. So for some of these, you know, it's like, yeah, I get it. It's about a ball and dribbling and running, but it's really not. It's not with the same momentum that you think it is. So getting players to sometimes just recognise that away from the ball, what is building up? How do I play my part? What's my velocity like? How am I reacting mentally? That's the challenge right now, and I am trying to introduce it here because I think it's important to developing the player longer term. They don't. A lot of players they or families will comment on how fast or how players might lack speed, and it's like, so what I'm seeing as speed is not what they're seeing as speed. So if I'm not speaking with them about these pictures, we're always going to have a misunderstanding when they think someone's too slow, you know?
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing of communication, you know, communicate in different ways. You know, you can have one picture saying one thing, one picture completely opposite, but it's all about how you interpret it. But it's about working with the player, because at the end of the day, they're the ones on the pitch, not the parents at the side. You know, they're supposed to support and help, you know, and develop the, you know, the maybe the confidence or using different ways of, you know, learning. So therefore, there's a little bit of, you know, there's a give back, you know, so therefore it's more of a, there's a help than more than a hindrance. But where can people find the kind of club? Is it on Twitter? Is it through LinkedIn? And also, the kind of work that you do. So I know you're involved in the two or three kind of companies. I'm just wondering if people could reach out to you to, you know, maybe speak to you more about the club and also learn about the kind of different roles that you've been uptaking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. Our club's on Facebook and Instagram. As am I. Think that we're actually, our brand is the, one of the largest youth football brands in the world, Rush Trucker. So it's got quite a lot of prestige behind it. A lot of the work that I do is related to players understanding how they do fit in and families understanding. Remember, these families, they invest up to 10,000 a year.
Yeah.
In these young players taking part in this sport, so it's a big deal to them.
So, thank you again, Helen, for the chat to me.
That's okay, appreciate it. Thanks for reaching out to me.